Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton, bringing you this week's edition of Earth and Home. Today, we will be reading from Real Simple Magazine, March 2024, and Mother Earth News, February-March 2024. Let's get started with Real Simple. How we live, advice, inspiration, and a little peace of mind. First person. What it feels like to overcome insomnia. All the conventional remedies failed, and I was out of ideas, until I discovered the magic of embracing my nighttime self. By Annabelle Abbs Streets. For 20 years, I had insomnia. I'd wake at all hours, tossing and turning until I finally managed to drift off again, rising red-eyed in the morning. It all felt normal and just about manageable. Then, in the space of 6 weeks or so, I lost my father, my stepfather, and my beloved puppy. My insomnia changed. Exhausted by grief and the huge volume of administrative tasks that accompany bereavements, I'd usually fall asleep without a problem, but I'd wake at 1 or 2 a.m. with my mind racing and find myself unable to doze off again. When my eyes opened, I had a 6-hour stretch of wide-awake darkness ahead of me. At first, I worked harder on my sleep hygiene. No alcohol, limited caffeine, no screens in the evening, plenty of outdoor exercise during the day. To no avail. I popped melatonin capsules and CBD gummies from the health food store. I diffused chamomile oil in my bedroom, bought a weighted blanket, pulled on special bed socks. None of these weapons were powerful enough to win the endless battle. I was exhausted, physically and emotionally, and growing increasingly anxious about what the lack of sleep would do to my mind and body. Would I gain weight? Lose brain cells? Would insomnia eventually kill me? Out of desperation, as well as curiosity, I began researching how insomniac women throughout history handled their malady. I read about Laura Serretta, a 15th century Italian writer, and the mid-20th century painter Lee Krasner. I didn't have much trouble finding sleepless women to study, and instead of dying of dementia and heart attacks, as today's headlines threaten, many survived and thrived, using their nights to study, work, draw, walk, stargaze, write. Some intrepid souls went outside to observe the nocturnal creatures. Some burned off creative energy, and some enjoyed the only period of time when everyone else left them alone. Knowing that so many women had made creative profit from this so-called night watch emboldened me. I wondered what might happen if, rather than torment myself, I used that sleepless time to do something fulfilling. So the next restless night, I got out of bed and tried to think of this quiet time as an adventure. What could I discover? As I pottered around, sketching, writing, reading, I noticed that the way I thought and felt at night was different from the way I thought and felt during the day. I was more open to new connections and ideas. If I ran into a thorny creative problem during the day, I could find a solution in these quiet nighttime hours. Moreover, I noticed that after these more productive nights, my days felt less weary. I looked back at my lyrics, poems, and sketches and felt a swell of pride that took the edge off my fatigue. Always down for more research, I dug into the latest science of the awake at night brain and discovered an article called The Mind After Midnight. In an academic journal, a group of sleep scientists had begun asking questions about how the brain works at night, when the prefrontal cortex, adept at organizing, planning, assessing, judging, and juggling tasks, and known to be more active in women, does its job less effectively. Could this explain why I felt more expansive and less self-critical during these hours? I took it as a cue to get even better acquainted with my nighttime self. Vowing to spend some of my wakeful hours outside, I bought a pair of astronomy binoculars, and on clear nights I lay in the grass and watched the sky. Looking upward calmed me. I felt connected to those I had lost, inspired. I took an astronomy class so I could learn about the stars revolving above. As it happened, I discovered that a trained night walking guide lived only a few miles from me, and she was leading group hikes in the countryside nearby. Together, we all walked silently for hours, in complete darkness, through the remote English countryside. No flashlights or phones were allowed, lest they ruin our night vision. She taught us to walk confidently to pitch blackness, to notice all the senses that spring to life when our eyes can't function. We listened more acutely, and since we couldn't see anything, our sense of smell intensified. Damp earth, night-scented flowers, crushed grass. I loved the communal intimacy of these night walks, but I couldn't call up the group every time I woke at 2 a.m., so I started venturing out on my own. I'd get dressed, grab a large stick, and take off over the darkened fields. At first, I'd startle at every sound. Eventually, I realized that the scuffling was only mice or trees blowing in the wind. Frosty, full moon nights quickly became my favorite. When I got back to bed, I usually fell asleep within minutes and woke 5 or 6 hours later without a trace of fatigue. Instead, I was jubilant, the way we feel the day after an incredible party, a little tired but full of wonderful memories of the old friends we saw, the new people we met, the food, decor, and conversation. I was merely ambling over fields, but the lit sky, the otherworldliness, the mysterious sounds and scents, they thrilled me. I not only craned my neck to stare at the sky, but turned to the ground underneath my feet, home to eerily green gleaming glowworms or moths with pink-rimmed wings. On bad weather nights, I took my imaginative night brain out for a ramble, writing poems and songs that my judgmental day brain would have discouraged, combining words in ways I might not have dared to during daylight hours. After several months, I started to sleep through the night, often for 7 or 8 hours straight. The first time I awoke and saw light outside, I felt a stab of disappointment. What had happened to my nocturnal me time? I'd missed the moon and the stars, the creatures and the silence and the night perfumes. I'd slept like a normal person. My body relished the feeling of being well rested for once, but at the same time, I confess it felt a little dull. I still have broken nights from time to time, and I actually look forward to them as holidays of sorts, when I can rediscover the world in darkness, if I so choose, and reacquaint myself with the secretive night-wired version of me. Annabelle Abstreets is the author of the new book, Sleepless: Unleashing the Subversive Power of the Night Self. That concludes the article, What It Feels Like to Overcome Insomnia. Now let's move on to another article. Pets, no more rough nights. You do your best to let sleeping dogs lie. Fido isn't always so considerate. Here's How to Keep Furry Roommates from Wrecking Your Night by Juno DeMello. Tire them out. After a busy day, all we humans want is our bed. That's true for our pets, too. Even your night owl kitty, says Brittana M. DVM, a veterinarian in Portland, Oregon. A tired cat is less likely to seek attention in the wee hours, she adds. Play with cats for 10 to 15 minutes twice a day using a fishing pole-type teaser toy to tap into their natural hunt-eat-sleep cycle. The second session should be just before bed. Let them chase whatever is on the end of the pole, occasionally letting them catch the bait, as this helps with relaxation, says Rachel Geller, EDD, a cat behaviorist and the author of Saving the World One Cat at a Time. End the game by making slower movements. Let your cat have one final juicy capture. Then offer a treat, Geller says. Following the instinctual feline pattern, sleep comes next. To tucker out a pup, aim for consistent daily walks. While most dogs need at least one 15-minute walk a day, the ideal frequency and length of your treks depend on your dog's breed, age, and overall health, so check with your vet. When you're out, let your dog call the shots a bit, says Marge Rogers, a certified professional dog trainer in West Jefferson, North Carolina. Allowing dogs to follow their nose and move at their own pace drains their energy, she says. To exhaust them mentally, Try a food dispensing toy, basically the dog version of a crossword puzzle. Try a Westpaw topple treat toy from $21, Chewy.com, or a snuffle mat. Give them beds of their own. It can be comforting to have your little smooshy sleep against you, but researchers at the Mayo Clinic say it can disrupt your sleep, as anyone who's had their turf invaded by a sprawling pitty can attest. The best setup for you both? Get your dog a bed and put it in your room, because the same researchers found that having your pup nearby can improve your sleep. Train dogs to use their beds by luring them with a treat, advises Michael Shikashio, a certified animal behavior consultant in Noank, Connecticut. Dogs learn to go through a pattern to get a treat, Shikashio explains, so it's best to tempt them with a nibble when they're already on the floor. This way, Fido doesn't think, say, jumping from human bed to dog bed is the reason he gets a snack. Reward dogs with the treat every time they're in their beds on their own accord, too. Cats should also have their own beds, though they're just as likely to sleep in a cardboard box or on your laptop, IM says. Her advice for picking a bed? Consider a cheap one, first to see what your cat likes. Cave bed, donut bed, etc. If you notice a preference, you can upgrade. Or set rules for your own bed. Of course, many of us ignore the advice about separate pet beds. According to a recent survey from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, 46% of pet owners bunk with their fur babies at night. And because life is often baffling, a group of researchers from Canisius College found that women sleep better with a dog by their side than with another human. To make sure everyone gets the rest they need, give your dog a defined sleep space at the foot of the bed. Train him to sleep in his spot the same way you'd train him to sleep in his own bed. Lure him down there with a treat. It's all about consistency and reinforcement, Shikashio says. You could even try placing his bed on yours, which is something that worked for M and her cat. If you're powering through allergies or asthma, put an air purifier in your room and wash your sheets at least once a week to help keep dander and other triggers at bay. Get up when you're ready. The excitement for breakfast is real. Ditto for going outside to pee on that same tree from yesterday. But barring any health issues, your pet should be able to make it through the night until you're up and at 'em. If you're being awakened by middle-of-the-night zoomies, consider upping your play sessions and leaving out one of those treat-dispensing toys mentioned earlier for your pup. That can help reduce boredom and quell any midnight munchies. Whatever you do, know that nothing good comes from giving in to 4 a.m. meowing. When you get up and reward cats with attention, even if it's negative, or food, you incentivize them to continue to harass you, M says. Same for early morning doggy wine fests. Start your day at a time that works for you. Be consistent, and your pup should adjust his inner alarm clock. Dogs like routine and structure, Roger says, so the more you stick to a schedule, the easier it will be for your dog to adapt. Pet still waking you up? See your vet to rule out any medical concerns like a neurological condition, GI issues, or in cats, hyperthyroidism, all of which can keep your animals awake at night, and you too. That concludes the article, No More Rough Nights. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Earth and Home, and I am your volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Let's move on to another article in Real Simple. Nerding Out, What Dreams Are Made Of? A Surreal Simple Look at Your Brain's Nightly Shenanigans by Jenny Brown. Maybe you don't remember your dreams, or maybe you wake up with a sense that you've dreamed but can't recall the content. That's called having a white dream. Regardless, virtually all humans, and possibly animals, birds, fish, and insects too, enter a strange hallucinatory world while asleep. Dreams occur throughout the night, but the longest and most bizarre happen during the REM cycle. Let's peek at what's going on. Still body, wild mind. Your body is almost totally paralyzed during REM sleep to prevent you from acting out your dreams. The only part of you that moves is your eyes, which dart quickly left and right. REM stands for rapid eye movement. Meanwhile, the emotional regions of your brain are even more fired up than they are during waking life, and the prefrontal cortex, the part that controls logic, goes quiet. Underlying meanings. Despite what dream dictionaries say, there's no symbolic code behind our nightly visions. Dreams of being chased are the most common, but the precise meaning is unique to everyone. They do serve critical functions, though, according to the modern field of dream science. One theory, they're overnight therapy. Your dreams likely relate to an emotional concern, and during REM, your brain doesn't produce the stress hormone, noradrenaline, which means you can work through feelings in a safe space. Another theory, they help you process the world more creatively. Freed from the rational constraints of the prefrontal cortex, your brain can draw kooky connections between your current life and distant memories. Why you dream about high school when you have a work project due, say, to gain insights. Weird science. Modern technology is helping dream research advance in, well, kind of creepy ways. Through MRI scans, scientists in Japan were able to roughly read people's dreams. By observing which areas of the brain lit up, they described with 60% accuracy what people were seeing in their sleep. A world of its own. Scientists are also enlisting lucid dreamers, people who are aware they're asleep, to help them get a view from within. While these dreamers are in control of themselves, they can't usually steer the plot, setting, and especially people in their dreams. In one experiment, lucid dreamers asked characters they met to solve basic math problems, and most struggled to do so or just refused. One started to cry. The takeaway? The dream world remains as mysterious and unpredictable as the real one, and math is hard. That concludes What Dreams Are Made Of. 5-Minute Clinic Gut Check. Even if you pound probiotics and eat plenty of fiber, digestion isn't always smooth sailing. Whether you suffer from irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, or just feel a little bloated, gassy, or crampy, a 10-minute tummy massage can get things moving through your system. Nutritionist Kate Scarlotta, RDN, and health psychologist Megan Real, PSYD, who both specialize in gastrointestinal disorders, recommend the I Love You method, in which you gently trace the letters I, L, and U on your abs, following the path of the large intestine. Try this tutorial from their new book, Mind Your Gut, the science-based whole-body guide to living well with IBS, out this month. 1. Lie face up on the floor or a firm mattress. 2. Put both hands on the left side of your abdomen, below the ribs. Using light pressure, make small circles with your fingertips, moving in a straight line down toward your left hip. This is the letter I. 3. Next, still making small circles, work from the right side of your upper abdomen down along the ribs and across the bottom of the ribs towards the left side. This is the letter L. 4. Now start at the bottom right side of your abdomen, near the hip, and make those circles up the right side, across the lower ribs and down the left side, gently creating a U. Keep it up for 10 to 15 minutes or until you feel relief. AM. That concludes 5-Minute Clinic Gut Check. Now let's move on to Mother Earth News. Plan a garden for a year's worth of food. These tried and tested worksheets will help you conquer the complexities of food self-sufficiency by Melissa K. Norris. The best gardening advice I can offer is to start out simple. Most of us would love to cut back on our grocery bill, and growing our own food certainly helps. When we're plunking seedlings or seeds into our garden soil, it doesn't look like all that much work. But when all those plants start to grow and require care, a beginning gardener can wonder what on earth they were thinking. That's why I recommend starting out by planting foods you and your family eat a lot, and that will grow well in your region. Here in the Pacific Northwest, I can't successfully grow okra, sweet potatoes, or peanuts because the weather simply isn't hot enough. Peppers and tomatoes don't do well here except in a greenhouse, but they may thrive where you garden. Most seed catalogs and seed packets specify an ideal region or growing zone. Also, you can seek advice from neighbors who've gardened successfully. Many independent local nurseries will offer seedlings of vegetables known to do well in your specific zone and region. Another way to select what to plant in your plot is to consider how well the item can be preserved. While cucumbers are most people's go-to for pickling, my husband really doesn't care for cucumber pickles. But we've been known to eat an entire quart of pickled asparagus at one meal. My daughter has grown to love fermented garlic dill pickles, so we grow the Chicago pickling cucumber. It's a prolific producer that's enjoyable fresh on salads, and it makes great pickles. We plant some lettuce because we love fresh salads, but we don't want a lot left over. Frozen lettuce isn't that appealing unless you're using it in a green smoothie. We choose to grow more of kale and spinach, both of which can be frozen and used in various dishes. Each family is unique, so you should tailor what you grow to what your family prefers to eat. Don't worry if you start out small, thinking it won't be enough, because being able to stay on top of a small garden will have you eager to plant more next year. Every year we bring in one new vegetable or cultivar to try, and that means we end up enlarging our garden. Calculating veggies. To help you determine how much and what you should be planting for your family, I'm including charts from my book, The Family Garden Plan. The worksheets on these pages will help you calculate your family's produce needs, how much you should plant, and how to plan your garden space accordingly. They'll aid you in accomplishing one of the often overlooked but most critical steps to a successful growing season and harvest, planning. First, use the worksheet to calculate your food needs for a year by listing the produce your family eats during a typical month. After all, what's the point of having a garden if it's full of foods your household members won't eat? Next, research which of the foods that your family eats will actually grow in your climate. Search by your zip code on the U.S. Department of Agriculture's updated Plant Hardiness Zone Map at https://planthardiness.ars.usda.gov. That's https://planthardiness.ars.usda.gov. Ask gardening friends and neighbors about vegetables they've grown successfully in your area. Finally, use the information you've gathered to determine what and how much to plant. This will produce an easy-to-follow plan for your garden. Sketch how you want your plot to look on graph paper. No matter your climate, conditions, or space, you can grow crops to reduce your grocery budget and provide wholesome food. Ready to grow? Start here. Melissa K. Norris lives in the North Cascade Mountains of Washington with her husband and two children. This article is adapted from her book, The Made from Scratch Life, Ten Peaks Press. Embrace the Made from Scratch Life. Blogger and homesteader Melissa K. Norris inspires with practical and easy methods to help you cook from scratch, garden, and preserve your own food. In The Made from Scratch Life, you'll learn how to plan, plant, and harvest for eating and preserving. Troubleshoot common gardening problems with natural solutions. And improve your family's health with natural cooking and cleaning methods. Whether you live in the middle of the asphalt jungle or on the side of a mountain, you can experience the homesteading lifestyle and start your own journey. This title is available at store.motherearthnews.com. or by calling 800-234-3368, item number 12025. And that's 800-234-3368, item number 12025. Record your food needs for a year. Start with a sample worksheet for an example of how to document your household's actual eating habits for 1 month. Then calculate the weekly average for each type of food and multiply the average by 52 weeks in a year. The example is food, green beans. Serving amount per meal, 2 cups, 1 pound, etc. 2 cups. Week 1, serving amount times meals. 2 times 2 equals 4 cups. Week 2, serving amount times meals. 2 times 0 equals 0 cups. Week 3, serving amount times meals. 2 times 1 equals 2 cups. Week 4, serving amount times meals. 2 times 0 equals 0 cups. Weekly average, total serving amounts divided by 4 weeks. 6 cups divided by 4 weeks equals 1.5 cups average. Yearly need, average weekly use times 52 weeks. 1.5 cups times 52 weeks equals 78 cups of green beans. That concludes the article, Plan a Garden for a Year's Worth of Food. We have time to read a tip from Country Lore's Reader's Tips to Live By. A shade better. My husband and I have lived in central Arizona for about 25 years. I've always had a garden, but I find the soil and weather fluctuations in the Southwest to be challenging. I usually plant my cool weather seeds, peas, radishes, lettuce, in late March, but by the time they mature, the weather is already too hot. My plants were getting baked in a region where temperatures can switch from cold to hot as early as May. We have clay soil and don't want to maintain a large garden anymore because we're getting older, so my husband built raised bed box planters for me. He also worked with me to develop the idea of using wooden pallets to protect plants from frost and wind when the weather is cold, and to provide shade and shelter when temperatures turn hot. Our new gardening system is working well. I'm so lucky to have a handyman in the house. Donna Valerio, Prescott Valley, Arizona. That concludes the tip from Country Lore Reader's Tips to Live By. If you missed any part of this program or are interested in another program, check out our on-demand menu on sunsounds.org. We are at the conclusion of this week's Earth and Home program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Thank you for tuning in this week. Join me next time for another new and informative program. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.